available are mainly 43 mixed material, which is the best overall material for frequencies from 1 to 1,000 megs as far as interference suppression. And again, keep in mind, we're talking about suppressing right now. We're not talking about matching or anything else. This is the suppressing application. There is a company that I don't have the name for it right here. I tried to put some of the stuff out but on the material data sheet, but my printer keeps printing out the wrong size and keeps cutting off some of the listings of the properties and the units and the symbols. Because there's many different mixes, by the way, depending on if it's nickel zinc or manganese zinc, the two type of cores that are popular. Each one has a certain mix number. Nickel zinc, by the way, as I mentioned earlier, the properties are the bulk resistance of it changes between the nickel and manganese, if I can say it right. That's a thumb twister. So you have mixes going from 68 all the way up to 76. So you got 68, 67, 61, 52, 51, 43, and so on. It's a long list. We hams use only certain mixes, but there are a lot more out there. All right, just a few more sentences. Okay, they talk about telephone interference. The standard telephone is highly susceptible to RFI. The telephone wiring in a house and outside on poles make a large receiving antenna. And then the telephone instrument are voltage variable resistors that act like detectors. Detector diodes and nearby radio stations are clearly heard. You know, the solution is to keep RF out of the telephone by putting ferrite beads on the telephone cable as it enters the instrument. Telephones used to be called instruments, by the way. That's an old-fashioned word. And, of course, how many people have these kind of telephones in their house? I don't think too many, because we all have cell phones. So it's just, you know, it shows how old this article is. But, again, it's good food for thought. Okay, so the plug of modular telephones will go through easily an F82 toroid, or a quarter inch split bead can be put over the cable. And of course, that's the best thing to do is put a split bead, because you don't want to, you know, otherwise you're going to have to get a toroid that's got a large enough hole. So they talk about burglar alarms, and burglar alarms, these are much like telephones in that they have extensive wiring throughout the building that acts like an antenna to pick up RF. The solution is the same. Use beads or toroids on the wiring entering the electronics box to keep RF out. Also, it may be necessary to put beads on the 110-volt AC power cord. I know people put beads on their power supply leads, the DC leads. Okay, two more things. VCRs. Oh, now we can... I should pause this out. How many of you, let me show of hands. How many people, raise your hand, how many people have a VCR? I don't see any hand being raised. Okay, we can skip this. but I'll mention it anyway. The VCR is a real RFI problem. Ferrite beads on all wires entering the VCR can eliminate RFI for most amateur bands. But on 80 meters, even this doesn't always work. W6BIP has worked on this problem. See Ham Radio Magazine, October 1984. Oh, we actually have a date. 1984. Okay. All right. So now we know how far back we're going. But again, you know, keep in mind, this is just food for thought, and it's something just to keep, so you have some information on which bead to use, and I think it's valuable in any case. Okay, so the last thing is, we have been talking about keeping RF out of the equipment. You can also use beads and toroids to keep RF in. That's just the opposite now, okay? That fish tank heater that makes all that racket on 80 meters is using a power cord and the house power wiring to radiate interference. A bead or toroid on the power cord right at the heater can keep the noise from entering the wiring. Computer power cords and connecting cables can be treated in the same manner. Sometimes RF comes out of a transceiver's power cable. A toroid can stop it. Or RF flows in the outside of the antenna cable, going right around your low-pass filter. Again, toroids to the rescue. That's getting RF into the shack, right? So each interference problem is different. You can try this and then try that until you find a solution. Using the principles outlined here, ferrite beads and toroids can be extremely helpful. Okay, so ends my little talk on ferrites and beads. And if anyone is interested and want a further discussion on this, and we can go deeper into it, I find it fascinating. And because now you're dealing with certain chemical mixes, and we need a good chemist, and I think we have a few out there that can talk about the different materials that are used. So with that, Roy, thank you for allowing Andy's Corner again. And you could, I have to go, but you can answer any questions because I got to get ready for work, Roy. So back to you. And I didn't time it out. How about that? AC2GS, WA2CDL, saying 73 for now. Go ahead, Roy. Back to you.
David recognized. Hold on for a second, David. We'll get to you. Thanks, thanks, Andy. Thanks for this episode of Andy's Corner. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I have a couple of points to make. As far as you were talking about Ethernet cables, the latest, greatest category of Ethernet cable these days is Category 8. There's Category 5 that everyone probably is aware of. There's 5E. There's 6E, there's 7, there's 7E, and now there's 8, and eventually there'll probably be 8E, and 9, and 10, and 11, and 12. But right now, the latest, greatest Ethernet is Category 8. David, do you wanted to ask or say something?
QSO. Good evening, Roy. Hope everybody is having an excellent evening. It wasn't too long ago I was experimenting with toroids. One toroid that was above 10 megahertz. I don't remember the exact number of the mixture. Then I experimented with mixture number 31, which is from 0.1 to 500 megahertz. And then I was playing around with a monster toroid. Monster toroid with, how to say, RG400. Cable, and I could maybe make about 35 turns on the monster cable, on the monster toroid. And, you know, everything that I did in the practice, you know, none of it was effective. I had absolutely no luck with toroids, you know. The thing that worked best for me was the adjusting of the ground system, and I bought some military-grade jumper cables, and it seems like, you know, more signal is getting to the antenna. So go figure. Go ahead.
Well, as Andy mentioned, you know, toroids and ferrites are very useful, but they don't do everything, and what you needed apparently was not ferrites. Ferrites can actually affect the standing wave ratio in a weird sort of way. If you have common mode on your transmission line and you apply a RF choke not at the feed point, but say 5 or 10 feet away from the choke point, then it effectively is lengthening your antenna. So your antenna is detuned and not resonant, and your VisWall goes up. So it can actually do that, and I have actually seen that happen to someone. So it can detune it. But in your case, your problem was not that it was being detuned by common mode. You probably didn't have any common mode problem. And so a choke really wouldn't affect it one way or the other. You simply needed to have a less lossy transmission line and perhaps a more effective counterpoise system. And so that's what works for you. So, you know, you have to figure out what the problem is before you decide on the tool.
USL Roy, I know what you mean, but the military-grade jumper cables were the most effective. And when I put some snap-on or a clip-on ferrite material on these cables, you know, it's hard to say whether they're doing anything. They're basically just sitting there. Go ahead.
Well, again, the whole purpose for the split beads is to increase the impedance of the common mode current coming back as a reflection from your antenna. If you're not getting a common mode reflection from your antenna, the use and value of RF chokes is not very high. You do it as insurance so that you don't have common mode. So sometimes it's very useful and sometimes it's just there, but it doesn't really negatively impact it. You know, what's really going on is all of these ferrites come in two different varieties. There's many different forms of magnetism. There's paramagnetism and there's ferromagnetism. Ferromagnetism is what permanent magnets have. What ferrites have is something called ferrimagnetism. And there are hard and soft ferrite substances. And these soft ferrite substances are those that don't kind of hold on to the magnetic orientation, and you have hysteresis, heat losses as much with soft ferrite. And all these mixtures are varieties of soft ferrite. Ferrites are mostly ceramics of iron oxide with either manganese zinc or nickel zinc thrown in to kind of tweak its frequency response and permeability. And so you slap these things on, and the current in the common mode is affected by it as though you have an inductance load in your coax. And so the more clamps you clamp or the more times you loop around a toroid, the higher the impedance of the common mode, not the regular RF you're sending to the antenna, but the reflected stuff that's coming back and riding on the outside of the shield. But if you don't have the current riding on the outside of the shield, it doesn't have any effect whatsoever. So that's probably what's going on in your system. Instead, you improved your transmission line losses by getting higher quality, less insertion loss connectors, and you probably fiddled a little bit with your radial system and improved the efficiency of the antenna itself.
USL, thanks, Roy. Well, you know, I might be getting it on certain frequencies, the reflected signal. And I guess one way, you know, to know if you, like, have RFI in your appliances or your speakers or whatever, you know. And let's just say, it's not terrible, but I can hear it, and mostly on certain frequencies and not others. And I tell you, I think I've gotten this thing, you know, down almost perfectly. So I'm not going to complain. If it ain't broke, you know, don't fix it. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm glad you got it fixed. There are actually ways to discern whether or not you're having common mode reflections on your transmission line. For some odd reason, I've never seen this device sold commercially, but I've seen more than a few guys who show you how to build it yourself, I guess because it's so simple. Ultimately, what it is a split bead, and I really hate the term bead, because I always used to think that a bead was a, just kind of like a spherical object, but it's really a hollow cylinder. Split bead, and you put a couple of coils of wire around it, you loop around it, and you feed it in one way to another to a galvanometer and read the induced current. Once I guess you turn it into direct current, because otherwise it would be alternating. So there's a little bit of a couple of components of circuitry, and then a volt ohmmeter set for microamps or milliamps, and you can get a rough approximation of your common mode problem. Of course, if your computer blinks and you hear your voice on the radio nearby, that isn't your shortwave radio, you know that there's something wonky going on.
Well, that's probably what was happening when I was a teenager and I was on 80 meters, you know, CW. And every time I turned my radio on, made one signal out, the next door neighbor called me up and said, "Hey, Dave, you're coming through our stereo."
Yes, that was a very difficult situation for many hams back in the day. One of the things that cable television has brought us is a lot less complaints. Broadcast radio is almost a thing of the past. Television is usually delivered either via streaming system or via cable circuits that are isolated from most of the RF that we generate. So we get away with a lot more these days than we ever did in the old days. A lot of our favorite antennas are infamous for a lot of common mode radiation and interference, NFEDs and such that we've talked about that aren't properly secured with an RF choke and such. So, yeah, it's less of a problem. It's one of those great things that technology has made life easier for him.
USL, yeah, thank goodness for cables. You know, I still listen to broadcast radio. I still listen to shortwave, you know. And my television signal comes in from an antenna, and it's converted from digital to analog. I guess they send the television in packets.
Well, yeah, I mean, Eric, may rest in peace, used to regularly tell us of the new protocols for digital video. America has one, Europe has another, and they do a lot of interesting, sophisticated twiddling of bits to get you your video signals today.
USL. Yeah, there's this box, it's a digital to analog converter, and it goes into an old CRT TV. But, you know, there's hardly anything good to watch, I think.
Well, I mean, that's the old song, something like 50 channels and nothing to watch, and now there's probably 500 channels. So, although, you know, we're living in a weird time of what's been called the streaming wars, where a lot of multi-billion-dollar corporations with a lot of intellectual property are kind of tired of Netflix having made a lot of money from that resource. They've taken it back, and they've tried to monetize it themselves, and they've spread everything so thin that they're all losing money. So all the major television and movie production companies are dropping billions of dollars on the streaming war. It's kind of a shame. Even Disney is losing money.
Roy, I have to say, I don't take television or feature movies, I don't take them so seriously.
Well, because you're not involved in that business. It's a multi-billion dollar business. And there's a lot of guys, unfortunately, losing their shirts these days.
Well, you know, one time I went down to the Independent movie theater in Greenwich Village, and I asked them, "What do you have there that I can put inside my mind, you know, and how much will it cost?"
Okay. That's another industry that got hit hard by the pandemic, and it you know, there are some movies that are making a surprising enormous amount of money, but I don't know if the general audience for movie theaters is anything close to the way it was before the pandemic. So, you know, the entertainment industry is having a lot of problems these days. You know, I wouldn't suggest anyone invest heavily in any entertainment stock until the dust settles.
Well, you know, I think most any film is really Hollywood, and, you know, it's sort of like a more fantasy than reality, at least that's how I see it. And, you know, I would think that there's plenty of material to watch on your cable or in your computer, you know?
Well, it depends. Some people want the latest, greatest. A lot of people were not terribly optimistic about James Cameron's Avatar 2. They said that he had waited too long, that the first one really, in retrospect, wasn't that special anyway, and that they were pretty sure he was going to lose his shirt because he had invested a lot of money in producing it, and they thought it would just kind of die on the vine. And, you know, who knows what? I think it earned $2 billion. I think it's something like the seventh or eighth largest grossing film in the history of film. So it only goes to show that experts don't have much in the way of expertise. Different people want different things, but I think there's a large demand for fantasy. People don't really enjoy real life, so they prefer some abstraction that's different than that.
Well, you know, I see number of celebrities here, celebrities there, that look somewhat familiar, but I don't know their names, you know. But I think it's because I never really watched the movies that they were in. You know, down on the corner they were making some film production, using high-tech, super high-tech gear, and lots of assistance, and lots of equipment, and, you know, very expensive gear, you know, because I think they'll want to take more off the top. So, you know, they have to make it look like it's really sophisticated.
Well, I don't know what to tell you as far as I don't know their motivations and what have you. There are a lot more famous people today than there ever have been. Some people just after a certain point, they kind of walk away from the common culture, and they find their own niche that they're happy with, and they lose track of what's going on in some places. There are people who can't recognize any movie star who first starred in movies for the last 15 years because they kind of stopped watching movies. I see these magazines like People Magazine, and I occasionally love to go through them and figure out how many of the people that are featured. I have the faintest idea of who they are, and the overwhelming majority, I do not have a clue. And for the most part, it's because a lot of them are entertainers that I really am not familiar with, sports people that I'm not familiar with, and especially a humongous number of what they call reality TV stars, which I wouldn't watch if they paid me. So I think that's my reason for not quite recognizing everyone in the average People magazine. But, you know, a lot of people just don't tolerate the common culture. They find their own niches, and those niches have different people who are famous in them.
QSL. Well, some of them are visibly famous. Some of them famous because, you know, they've been around for a long time, you know, like Bill Murray, Billy Joel, Susan Sarandon, Sarah Jessica Parker. I don't know, so many of them. The younger ones, I probably wouldn't know.
Yeah, it's a matter of a time that you cared about it, and so you saw them in their early works, and they made an impression upon you. if you haven't seen, the 4 billionth rom-com to be produced, you don't know the people who are supposedly the big stars of those newer films. So, you know, it's an age, it's a culture thing, it's all kinds of stuff that it goes around. You know, if you ever have nothing better to do, you should check out, I think it's called Twitch. It started as a gamers streaming service where you watched people play video games and stream them. And now it's kind of gotten generalized into chats and all kinds of interesting things. But it's overwhelmingly filled by so-called Zoomers, Generation Z and relatively younger millennials. And it's a different culture entirely. Of course, for people out there who have children and grandchildren, you just have to talk to them, and you know that. But for a lot of us that don't have direct contact, my nephew and nieces are already in their early 40s, so they're out of that entirely. It's intriguing kind of sitting in and watching another culture that lives right in the same place you do interact and such. They have their own little uniqueness.
USO. I'll definitely check it out. I think it's good to be original, some of these celebrities, I've had words with them, met them, and I guess it was kind of like surreal, seeing them in person as opposed to, like, watching them on the screen. But even then, it was... What else to say? I don't know if there's anything else.
Okay, if there's nothing else, there's nothing else. I haven't met too many famous people. I rode back from Los Angeles many, many years ago on the so-called red eye, and when we left the plane, I noticed that coming out of the first class area, of course, was good old Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was wearing a suit and a tie, and he looked smaller than I thought he would. So I was a little disappointed.
Well, if you knew him back in the 70s, when he was a super bodybuilder, his upper body was probably twice as big as the rest of him.
Well, this was probably back in the late 80s, early 90s, but like I said, he was wearing a suit. The whole point of suit, especially at that point, a lot of suits had shoulder pads on them, so you couldn't really figure out the upper torso physique of any guy wearing a suit back in those days.
I used to wear like a green plaid jacket, green plaid hat, green bow tie, white shirt. I got more attention. I certainly could meet more people that way, but I don't really see what the purpose of it was anyway.
Well, that's kind of weird because you did something, but you seem not to know why you did it.
Well, I also walk around with a camera, so I wore the jacket and the hat and the tie and carried this big mega Hasselblad camera and took pictures of since you take pictures, I want you to do other things.
Okay. Well, it sort of depends what you're looking to do. Some people are conformists. Some people are nonconformists, but they nonconform in a conforming way. And other people like to be unique. And there are different motivations for each type of decision. I melded into the surroundings. For professional purposes, I wore a suit. For non-professional purposes, I wore jeans. I liked jeans even back in the 60s when it wasn't hip to wear jeans, pretty much. I never particularly was interested in standing out. I didn't find a need, so I didn't bother.
Well, I wonder if intuitiveness is another category that you didn't mention.
Intuition. How does that relate to a selection of dress attire?
You were talking about different ways of being. Some people would be conformist, some people be nonconformist, some people creative. I don't know. Maybe there's some other thing that isn't in the list.
Oh, I'm sure there's lots more that's not on the list. I just kind of, but that's the short form that I came up with. You know, there's a lot of nuance and complications to life, so we all kind of simplify and categorize, and it loses something in the translation, but if you never translate, the ultimate material you deal with is so long-winded that everyone loses track of what you're trying to explain. So you always, we all kind of try as best we can to distill our thoughts down to the bare essentials to get them across to the other people before the other people get bored and daydream away.
There was one more thing I wanted to say. Toroid. You know, I realized that you can make loops with wire, loops of wire, say about 6 to 8 inches loops, and maybe 6 to 8 turns of the wire, and with some fasteners, you fasten the top and bottom, and then run the wire, you know, from your radio to your antenna connection. You know, this also, I think, can be effective. You don't need the toroid at all.
That is called an ear core inductor. Inductors, and when you're putting loops into the toroid, or even when you're clamping a split a bead, it's considered a single loop. All these are inductors, and by changing the core material, you increase the impedance for a given frequency. And so that's the whole purpose of putting ferrites instead of air. Air will give you a very, very, very small impedance, small resistance to the common mode. So if you do it a lot of times, and you make up for the lack of a core, it might be equivalent, but it never is, because no one ever uses that much wire. So the easiest, simplest way to have a very effective RF choke with a high enough impedance is to put a ferrite core in it rather than an air core. You can do it, and people do it. They call it ugly choke, but it's not as efficient.
Well, you know, I was watching a conversation, some dissertation on Ham Radio University, and the person presenting, one of the options was a toroid core with 5 or 6 turns in it. Essentially, is it true that you can put as many turns as you fit? Go ahead.
Yes, you know, it becomes a mechanical problem, it becomes a financial problem. You know, some coax cable costs a dollar plus a foot. So if you're going to use a lot of feet of coax to not give you a distance that you're using the transmission primarily for, but just as an ugly balance, you could, there's you know, no limitation. The coils of the transmission line do not affect the differential mode RF signal that you're sending to the antenna. They only affect the unopposed common mode that's reflected back. So the more coils, the more impedance, the more it will impede the common mode reflected current. So there's no limitation except for the expense of the coax and the mechanics involved of keeping such a large, heavy coil piece of coaxial cable in position.
A VDH with a question.
Yes, John.
Is there a reflected signal common mode? Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems that both the forward and the reflected signal would both be differential mode, wouldn't they?
It can be. I talked about this, I think, with Dick many, many years ago, that not all reflected signals are definitely common mode, but the ones that you can do something about are common mode. The ones that are in differential mode is, other than changing things as far as your antenna so you don't have the reflection coefficient, I don't know of anything that you could do for differential mode reflection.
Well, if I was to take, let's just take a case like a 300 ohm line. If I took a length of 300 ohm line and ran it through a toroid, and let's say I terminated that 300 ohm line with a 150 ohm resistor, so I would be setting up a 2-to-1 SWR. Wouldn't the forward signal is differential, and isn't the reflected signal being reflected from that 150 ohm resistor also differential, and would the toroid affect that?
I would think not under those circumstances. Also, you have to keep in mind that differential mode reflections aren't radiated. So, they'll go into hopefully your antenna tuner and be reflected back down the transmission line. And, if they stay differential, you won't have the common mode problems of getting RF in your shack. So, you fix what you can fix, and you settle for those things that you can't do anything about.
Yeah, I always thought that the RF in the shack was due to the unbalance. I remember back in the day when pterodactyls were seen flying on the horizon, I used to operate an inverted V antenna, and I fed it with coax, and I always got a hot mic, because it was an unbalanced, it was a balanced antenna being fed by unbalanced cable. So I had quite a few problems with that. I didn't understand what was doing it then.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why everyone advises everyone else that if they're going from coax, which is unbalanced, to something like a dipole that's balanced, that they have a balance. So any change from a balanced to an unbalanced circuit is going to produce reflections and often common mode reflections, and those common mode currents are the ones that radiate. Anything that, even if it radiates, even if the current gets reflected as differential, because it's differential, it's non-radiating, so it's going to just kind of, it'll either wreak havoc with the transmitter stage or be reflected back into the antenna system and dissipate along with the attenuation losses of the coax.
Oh, I got it. Okay, I got you. Yeah, that was the problem I used to have when I had that inverted V antenna. Driving with coax, as you get a lot of RF in the shack. Okay, fine. Thanks, Roy. Thanks.
You're welcome. Common mode is a very common problem, and people have it all the time. I talk to people who have RF in their computers and RF in their microphone amplifiers. That's a very common thing, unfortunately, on HF. So any other points, David?
How's the thing? I wanted to introduce you. I have a very small HF radio made by Yans, the Fox Tango 891. They say it's a mobile radio, but I use it for base station. And I picked up a SP2000 loudspeaker for this radio. It's about four times the size of the radio, and I get the audio that I was looking for.
Okay, I'm glad to hear it. It's not the usual way that people work it. Different people have different needs. Some people's ears are better than others. They appreciate better fidelity. I think I heard Wesley. He did want to do a question tonight, and we're kind of running a little bit late. So I hope you don't mind, David, if I cut you off for tonight. You're more than welcome to come back in future Sundays and discuss any topic you want.
Thank you, Roy. Have a fantastic night, and a good evening, everyone.
Okay, Wesley, what do you want to talk about tonight?
In regards to the subject that we discussed, for its permeability, it was not discussed. So ferrite coat permeability is always positive and is not constant. It depends from nature of material, humidity, position of the medium, temperature, and frequency applied to the magnetic field. Also, it wasn't specified that permeability is between 1,400 and 15,000, especially when we're talking about zinc, manganese, ferrite cores. There are different kinds of permeabilities. It would be initial, effective, apparent, complex, reversible, and amplitude permeability. So, right touch just the one. The reversible permeability is represented we can measure it with small measuring alternating field place over the DC field. And when that happens, reversible permeability depends on factors like DC field, core geometry, and temperature. So let me go to the main subject. I sent you a few videos. Quickly, I want to have a few words about it. One was about the worldradiohistory.com. That is a quite remarkable site. It gives you publications related to ham radio, bookshelf, amateurs, and DX. Publications, QST, early radio, what's going on in the United Kingdom in ham radio, and plenty of others. So I hope you saw that video, Becky.
Yeah, I saw the video. That site's been up for years now. It was discussed on a TechNet, at least one, if not a few. In the past, it's a good archive site. It has PDFs that are searchable, and it has 73 magazine and a lot of other magazines and documents from the past that apparently are no longer copyright. And they're a good source for material that's a little on the dated side, but fine. People who belong to the ARRL. Have access to the QST archives that go all the way back probably to the beginning. That's another great source of information. The internet provides an abundance of good information and occasionally, unfortunately, terrible information because it's, no one kind of curios everything. But it's it was an interesting video, and it's a very good archive site. I haven't used it a great deal because, I generally can Google things and find more up-to-date sources for the things I'm looking. But it's a good thing to have.
The CW Vox Voice Care for Verbal Morse Code, that was another video that you...
Yes, okay. You've apparently found some ham who's doing some interesting YouTube. I find, unfortunately, more hams that make bad YouTube than I would want, which would be 0%, but I guess it's maybe about 15 to 20%
kind of go off on tangents and kind of try to explain things that they don't seem to understand either. But this particular gentleman had a very good production. He demonstrated a circuit design that he had made using an Arduino and some rather simple components, two transistors, a few diodes, a few capacitors. And the point of the exercise was he vocalized Morse code by speaking it, and this device took the audio signal and changed it to a simple key trigger for his radio's key circuit. So for people who can talk but can't operate a key, that would be useful. I would tend to find it tedious if I had to do it for very long. It's easier, even though I'm not up to it anymore, because it's just out of the habit of flicking a key rather than go around going did it did did da da did da did did did, you know, endlessly. I would probably get a headache from it personally, but it was an interesting presentation.
It's the Nano Arduino. It's an 8-bit microcontroller with DSP, two transistors, a few passive components, very easy to assemble within 1 hour if you need that. So then da-di-da-di-da-da-di-da, and it's going to translate it to the same length of the signals that would be keyed, I believe. Right, it's the right pronunciation. And, yes, it's a little bit annoying. Now, the other one is EIM tag, which is Zolark. It's a tiny multi-tool for learners and makers that contains an oscilloscope, signal generator, triangular, square, sinusoidal, and PWM generator, right? DC bias and spectrum analyzer. And probably, 4 inches by 4 inches by 2 inches? Maybe a little bit, something about that. But it also comes with the power supply that is good from 0 to 24 volts and could also serve as a charger to your phone and your other devices. Back to you.
I don't think they were combined. I think they might have been made by the same startup company, perhaps, but I think they were presented as two different little gadgets to play with. The oscilloscope is really small, and it kind of gets stuck, so I'm not quite sure, at least in the demonstration, whether they fixed the software. And, of course, the big problem I would have is it only goes up to 1 megahertz. I would hope to have an oscilloscope that could handle something a little bit higher than that, personally. Although, you know, if you need an oscilloscope that's really dirt cheap, that certainly would be suitable. But I think it's and also the function generator is not the prettiest functions that I've seen. The sawtooth looked rather sine wave-ish to me. The square wave looked kind of sine wave-ish to me. You needed to have a rather significant imagination to perceive square and square waves in that device.
Okay. Same question. When a magnet attracts another magnet, can we consider work to be done?
No. Work is not attraction. Work is work. If you move a given weight due to a magnetic field, that's work. But purely and simply, your magnet sticking to your refrigerator is not work being done.
I agree with that. And when you have two magnets and you try to interact them. There will be a tiny amount of radiation. What kind of radiation is that?
I'm not quite sure what you're getting at when you're saying interacting them. You got to be a little bit more definitive with how you... You know, interacting can mean almost anything and almost nothing.
Okay, you have a two permanent magnets that repel each other, and you're trying to push them together.
Okay, as far as I'm aware, if you don't move them, you're not going to generate anything. If you move a magnetic field, a moving magnetic field, produces an electromagnetic field. But if you're holding on to two magnets that are repelling each other and they're not changing distance, then you're not creating any field.
I'm not talking about a field, I'm talking about radiation. You're trying to squeeze the magnetic field and push one to the other. There will be a tiny amount of radiation. What radiation is that?
I have no clue. What radiation are you alluding to? Once again, it would not be electromagnetic, so what kind of radiation are we discussing?
The work to move a repel magnet is done by you. The magnetic field just converts the mechanical energy of motion of one magnet to field energy, then back to mechanical energy of the other magnet. So this is a lossy process in general. What would happen then?
Well, again, like I said before, there's no motion. This is a steady state situation that you're giving me, at least the way I'm interpreting it, that you have one hand on one magnet, you have another hand on the other magnet, you feel a repulsive force, but you are keeping them identical distance apart over time. So there is no motion in that example, as far as I can perceive.
Oh yes, you have a motion. You're trying to push them together.
That's not a motion. That's attraction and repulsion. It's not motion. Motion is an object moving in relation to the other object. If they're both an inch distance away from each other, and they stay an inch distance away from each other, they don't have a motion.
You're making a mechanical motion by pushing them towards each other. And I'm asking not about that. I'm asking what's happening then, and what kind of radiation will be there.
Again, strictly, you don't need to have motion. You can be in a steady state situation where you feel the repulsion, but you're not changing the distance. If you're changing the distance, if you're kind of pushing on it and it pulls back, and you're pushing on it and it pulls back, then it's a motion. And if it's a motion, you're moving magnetic fields, and magnetic fields that accelerate back and forth produce electromagnetic waves.
But you didn't answer the question. What kind of radiation would be there?
I do not know what you are asking. I already said electromagnetic radiation. I think you're going to want me to say something like planar waves. Not because I think it's planar waves, but because the answer seems to often be plane waves.
Do we have eddy current there?
Do I have a what?
Eddy current.
Okay, eddy currents, okay, so you say, you're suggesting that there are electrical currents induced by a moving magnetic field, and there are. There's a moving electric field and there's an electromagnetic field. All those things exist.
Okay, I'm going to give you the answer. There will be a tiny amount of radiation that will be heat. There will be some heating of the magnets due to the eddy currents.
Okay. I wouldn't exactly call that. I realize everything is energy is radiation. That's kinetic energy. It's dissipated as convection, conduction, and what have you. Everything that we do generates waste heat. So, I mean, the answer to almost anything that we expend any energy for is going to produce waste heat, and you can then say that it's producing radiation. But most people really don't kind of think in terms of waste heat as radiation. But okay, if that's what you wanted to get at. Like I said, it's much more complicated than simply that, because the radiation is an electric field, a moving electric field. It's a moving electromagnetic field. It's very complicated, but part of it is dissipated as waste heat.
What kind of electromagnetic radiation you were talking about is being produced and how?
If you take a magnet and you move it around in a non-constant velocity, you produce an electromagnetic field. It's a very weak one, but you do. Any kind of charged particle at rest produces an electric field. Any charged particle at a constant velocity produces a magnetic field. Any charged particle accelerating and decelerating produces an electromagnetic field. In point of fact, a charged particle sitting on the surface of the Earth because of gravitational time dilation is producing a very, very, very minuscule electromagnetic field out into space. It's most likely unmeasurable by anyone, but according to relativity, it's doing it.
When you push two magnets, one to each other, and then you're creating eddy current, what is the predominant radiation that you produce? At what bandwidth?
I get not quite sure what you're getting at. I assume that you're talking about heat. Heat loss, I guess, black body radiation? I don't really know what you're getting at.
How about infrared?
Well, heat among others, black body radiation for most objects tend to produce infrared signals. That's the whole reason why temperature detecting interferometers are used. You point an infrared detector at an object, and you're able to calculate approximately what the temperature of the outside surface of that object is based upon the infrared energy being emitted as waste heat. As radiative loss of an object that is a higher temperature than the atmosphere around it.
A magnetic field, that's a statement. The magnetic field can block radiation in the field if the field is strong enough and is oriented properly. For example, the Earth magnetic field deflects charged particles from the sun, preventing them from searching the surface of, reaching the surface of the planet. The question is, how and why?
Because, I disagree with your description. A charged particle is not energy, or not radiation. Radiation does not necessarily is able to be controlled by magnetic fields unless they happen to interact with magnetic fields. There are a lot of things that don't interact with magnetic fields. Gravitational forces don't directly interact with magnetic fields. Electromagnetism doesn't directly interact. You could hold a magnet on a hot object from today until next year. That infrared emissions is not going to stop. So it just happens to be that charged particles, which are not radiation, are charged, and when they interact with a magnetic field, they can be contained within the lines of the magnetic field. So that's where charged particles, when you ionize something that's like antimatter, and you have it in a charged condition, you can then contain it in a magnetic bubble because it can be manipulated by a magnetic field, where a neutral atom can't. But that's not radiation.
Of course it's not. So the statement says that magnetic field of the Earth blocks radiation. True or false?
It's a problem with English. When you're saying radiation, it's not going to block gamma rays.